Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session, and well, I'd love to talk about something other than what's going on with COVID-19 and everything else, but I just don't know how we can. So let's, anyway, the latest developments.
Hi.
Yeah. Oh, Steve, how you doing? Yeah, Steve and I are together in the studio. A couple things. Saw a couple articles, including, I think it was the lieutenant governor of Texas and multiple CEOs, including the CEO of Wells Fargo, the founder of Paychex, who's a guy named Tom Golisano, both billionaires, and both of them said that we need to choose the lesser of two evils. We need to either contain this or save the economy. We can't do both. And I don't know how you feel about that. I do understand what they're saying. However, we've already kind of started down this path. And to half-ass it at this point would be completely misguided, in my opinion, because everything I've heard, I actually saw an interview with Bill Gates today, and he said that the biggest risk we have is to not stay under this plan long enough, have it make the whole situation that much worse, and we've then suffered and gained nothing.
Yeah, so Bill Gates has, about 4 years ago, Bill Gates was giving some sort of a talk. I don't know if it was a TED Talk or whatever it was, but I watched it online probably, I don't know, like a month or a little over a month ago. And he was talking about this very thing. So the next big thing is going to be a virus. Now, of course, conspiracy theorists are saying that the globalists and blah, 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 and Bill Gates and Soros conspired to hatch this grand plan of releasing a virus. But I think Bill Gates is just looking at history. He's looking at kind of globalization as a whole, what it means, access, the ability to travel, like the kind of blurred lines of sovereignty, right? I mean, like, yes, you know, we'll save the border wall conversation for another time, although it's funny, Mexico has actually built a wall trying to keep Americans out now. So,
Trump's plan worked. Mexico,
right. I mean, like, Mexico, I was thinking about that, like, because I saw this picture and I'm like, what the fuck is that? I was like, it was a wall in Texas, like, in Mexico. But I think, you know, Bill Gates, just kind of forward thinking, he was looking at, you know, we had the H1N1 crisis when Obama was in office, and a lot of people are saying, well, you know, nobody reacted to that the way they're reacting to this. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, it was handled better initially than what we have done to this point. And, you know, because Obama had people in place who were ready to kind of attack this head on. And then you mix that with, you didn't have social media then.
Right.
Yes, you had 24-hour news cycles, but you in 2009,
still had Facebook.
Yeah, but the shit was in its infancy, right? You didn't have everybody's grandmother and uncle on Facebook, and it was it was more of a millennial tool to use to figure out where the next party was. Twitter was also maybe in its infancy or hadn't started yet or something along those lines. But as much as 24-hour news spreads information, social media just puts that in hyperdrive.
Absolutely.
And so you didn't have that, and that's part of the reason why, right? You just didn't, you were able to control the message better. Also, Obama was better at delivering these sorts of messages in measured tones. And so that's not Trump. Everything with Trump needs to be bombastic and kind of, everything's great, everything's fine, I've got it under control, boom, bam, it's going to be all this and that, don't even worry about it. You know, he's more...
I'm the only one who can solve this problem.
All that sort of stuff. And listen, it's not necessarily a criticism. It's he just handled it different and it caused a different response. And he responded in a different time frame and it's having a different impact. Also, this coronavirus, COVID-19 or whatever you want to call it, is much more contagious. It's more aggressive. We're seeing it spread faster. You know, H1N1 did kill a lot of people. But it was over a longer period of time that the total numbers came in. And again, it just didn't spread the way that this is spreading.
Well, I think a big difference is with, I think, most influenza-based viruses, you're not contagious while not being symptomatic.
Right.
And what they're saying about this is, I mean, it's perfectly possible sitting in this room, you or I, has that virus in our system. It's just not hitting us hard, but we could be dragging it along to anyone else.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think that's true of H1N1. I don't think it's true of any of those
And this virus is just differently. I mean, we're very fortunate. We have the Cleveland Clinic. We have University Hospitals and even Metro Hospital, which is the county's hospital, which I think I've said before on the show. But we have a lot of really quality medical minds here. And, you know, again, because my agency works directly with the hospital system, because of the clientele and the people that we deal with, you know, I've had an opportunity to sit in on calls with between our housing authority and some of the people from the different hospitals. And, you know, some of the things that they're saying is just that, we don't have, again, all things that you've heard, but kind of being verified by people who work in this realm of medicine and disease and everything else. But because we don't have an immunity to it, because we don't have a vaccine, because it attacks the way the lungs, the way that it does, and because we are all on top of each other, right? And because people can travel and were traveling so freely for so long, you know, flying into New York, flying into Chicago, flying into San Francisco, flying in and out, into LA, mass transit, you know, people just being able to hop in a car and drive, you know, from state to state. That's why this thing is spreading. And the concern is, yes, you're worried about deaths. Yes, it is more deadly than, you know, some of these other strains of the flu. But that can be controlled. But the issue is you have to get control of the virus. And the reason why you have to do that is because if you don't, then you will see a run on people having to go to the emergency room, having to be hospitalized. And you're going to run out of space. You're going to run out of people to deal with these people. And then once that happens, now you have a compounding issue.
Right.
Right. I mean, and here's the other thing. Other issues don't stop. Car accidents don't stop. Now, the one doctor was speaking, he said, listen, the beauty of this is because people aren't going out as much. People aren't out in the streets as much. People coming in for car accidents are down. People coming in for various, you know, injuries, things like that are down. People are less willing to go to the emergency room or go to the hospital for various things because, you know, they're worried about this virus or they're adhering to the stay, you know, the shelter in place order that we have here in Ohio. You know, there's certain things that they can't control, like, you know, pregnancies, births,
sure.
You know, emergencies like heart attacks, all that sort of stuff is still going on. And those other emergencies that are still happening, that's why we really have to try to get control of this, because we can't stop those sort of things from happening, right? And so those people still need a place to go. And if you add, you know, this new virus that really few people have an immunity to, and I say a few because you have some people who have had it, you know, who have recovered from it. Like, so those people likely are probably immune to it at this point. You're going to have this converging on the hospitals of people needing access. You're going to run out of room, and eventually you're going to run out of people to take care of them. And again, that's where the problem lies.
You know, you brought up social media, and there's another problem with social media, and that is how easy it is to spread disinformation, whether willingly or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen so much ridiculous shit out there about, if you drink water, it makes the virus go down your throat into your stomach and kills it. So just drink water.
Again, I'm not sure why that is even. We see these things all the time.
Well, and another, I saw some just the other day. So
I think we should really, like, so we're having this conversation spreading bad information. Well, so let's not,
About spread bad information. I'm about to talk about, there was an article that came out in, I think it was Cleveland.com, and the headline was, man arrested, police say he violated the shelter in place order. Now, the right wing is always about, this is martial law, this is the government trying to control us. I was walking through a parking lot of a grocery store the other day, and there was some guy helping an elderly man in a wheelchair get into his car going, this whole thing's bullshit, and he's ranting and ranting and ranting, and I thought, all right, you know, the get involved, alarm was going off, and then the use common sense button worked. And I'm like, what am I going to engage in a conversation with this guy over that's going to do any good whatsoever? Simply put my groceries in my truck and drove on home. But there's still people ranting about how this is a government conspiracy. And you see this headline that says, man arrested for violating the stay-at-home order. Well, he was arrested for violating the governor's order. In addition to shoplifting and other... He was in a store stealing stuff. The store owner called the police. The police got there, arrested him for shoplifting. And they added on that he was, you know, violating the shelter-at-home order. Because apparently shoplifting is not an essential activity. But that headline really, really pissed me off because people are going to read it and not read the whole article. And that's going to be the, told you martial law was coming. Did you hear they arrested that guy in Avon? And it drives me fucking crazy. So yeah. That's where social media is that much more dangerous because some idiot's going to plaster that.
That goes back to the media, right? And I think there's a number of conservatives and Trump supporters who, and even people just kind of center left or center or on the left, whatever. I think there's a number of people out there who their biggest concern is the media's role in this, right? The media kind of being extreme, the media putting out information and being alarmist. The problem is, and there should be a concern because the media does have a role.
Huge role.
And in some instances, yes, they are being alarmist. Now, there's an argument to say, listen, we need to think about and process and prepare for worst case scenario whenever you're talking about a virus and whenever you're talking about something that can kill people. And I'll listen to that argument all day. But you wish that there was a little bit more control over how information was put out. You know, you wish that it were vetted better. And you also wish that you didn't have these sensationalistic headlines like man arrested for violating the shelter in place order.
Right.
Right. The guy was arrested because he walked into a store and started shoplifting.
Yes.
Right. Like, so it's not, you know, and so then they slapped that on top of it because, you know,
why not?
Because the police, they can't arrest anyone with just a single charge. It's got to be all the charges.
Right.
Right. Like, so there is a role that concerns me about how the media is delivering information because you can't ignore their relationship with Trump. Right. And there are a number of media outlets that feel one of two ways. Either they hate him and they want to take him down, or they want to promote his message and they have adopted, you know, themselves as being his voice. Right. And so balancing those two, it can be frustrating. Now, CNN has done a decent job of trying to be objective here, but obviously any chance they get to take a shot at Trump, they take it. You know, MSNBC, they're in that same boat. They're not taking as many shots at Trump. But again, a lot of this goes into the people that they bring on and their opinion shows and how these different ideas are being presented and kind of chopped up and to either show the president in his best light or in his worst light, as opposed to just deliver the information, vet it and deliver it. Right. And we can form our own opinion about the guy in charge.
Well, right. But I mean, this was a Cleveland.com article, I believe. So this was not, you know, please. My big thing is whether it's Cleveland.com or CNN or Fox, all of them are after clickbait and, you know, that kind of stuff. They're all just looking for more attention. And if the headline was shoplifter arrested, also charged with this, it wouldn't be the clickbait. It wouldn't have sucked me in. I would have said, oh, a shoplifter got arrested.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, in a time like this, when everyone is so hungry for information, I don't even know if you need to take the extra step of adding a sensational headline, right? I mean, like, it just, like, everyone is looking for as much information as they can possibly consume because we live in an age where everyone needs to know now. Right. It's the idea of saying, I don't know, I don't have an answer. Like that's like a scarlet letter these days. So people want all the information because we're so used to being able to get whatever we want when we want. We've got Google, we've got Amazon, we've got Netflix, everything is on demand. And so you know, I don't even know how necessary it is to add the sensational headline. Like, you know, people are gonna find the information in these situations.
The flip side of that is they're gonna try to outdo each other to be more sensational because there are more people out there looking for stuff. And if one of them says something flashy and scary, and the other one says, "Here's a logical, measured response," flashy and scary is gonna draw more attention.
I'm not arguing it. I'm just saying that they're creating this problem.
Okay, just I agree with themselves. That. I agree with that. Know? Yeah, they're adding to the problem rather than dialing it back and focusing on distribution of information.
Right.
There've been a bunch of important people, for lack of a better way of saying it, celebrities and public figures who have tested positive. Rand Paul tested positive. Now Boris Johnson tested positive. And Boris Johnson is considered the English version of Trump. I don't know if that's really fair, although they are loudmouth guys with goofy hair. But I've heard people say that from an intellectual standpoint, Boris Johnson isn't nearly as regressed as Trump. But this is going to be weird because the head of state is now in isolation trying to maintain his job from isolation while carrying the disease that he originally tried to downplay.
I don't think it's that weird, and mostly because technology. I mean, he's got access to plenty of digital technology. There's so many things that you can do. Like, there's so many things that don't need to be done in person.
Yeah.
That, you know, a lot of people are talking about, how will this change kind of the way we do business in general, because a lot of people are finding out we don't need the face-to-face. We don't, everyone need to be cooped up in, the same building, wasting this capital expenditure on leasing a building when you can have more people working from home and reduce the space and reduce your footprint. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think there's a little bit of irony there, because he's one of the, he did downplay it and say, it's more important that we keep the economy going as opposed to preparing for this. He did get it. But the reality is he's probably going to recover from this.
Oh yeah.
Right. I doubt that he'll need to be hospitalized. I don't know how healthy he is. I've never really paid that much attention to him. But I would, unless he has an underlying issue right. that either he didn't know about or they've kept under wraps because he's a public official. But barring anything like that, chances are the guy's going to recover. He's going to be fine. And so I don't think it's that big of a deal. And I think that if he quarantines for 2 weeks, he feels the effects, fatigue and the chills and headaches and everything else. But then he makes a full recovery in 15 days or however long it takes. I think that will, in his mind, I could see it bolstering his argument, right? Like, see, look, I got it. I'm fine. Now I'm immune to it. If everybody did this, then we would be fine. We can get over it. It wouldn't hurt our economy. There are going to be people who die, but ultimately everybody's going to die and somebody's going to die. You're going to die from something, and that's the argument that people are making, right? The argument is that the people who are going to die from this, for the most part, right, a large percentage of the people that are going to die are older, are at risk from other,
right.
Pathogens and diseases and viruses and things like that. They're also expensive. And so if we lose them, that's a sacrifice that we have to make so we don't set the world economy back for whatever period they're projecting. And it doesn't create additional problems with, because we have, a hurt economy, then you have more people that, lose jobs, who don't have money, who become more desperate, and then, this sort of ripple effect. It's fine to think about that in the back rooms. I think it's fine to think about that theoretically on a chalkboard somewhere that you erase after, but you can't come out and say that type of shit in the media and kind of go out like the guy from Texas or Glenn Beck or whoever these other people are who have come out and said, yeah, you know what, if we got to sacrifice our older population, if you got to sacrifice your grandma, it's time for us to let them go. We got to do what's best for the economy. That's insane to say out loud, to ask someone to do, because how on earth do you choose? You can't. As a humane, civil, established right. society, we've never picked winners and losers that way. It's one thing to do it when it's actually involving, which business do you open, which business do you close when it comes to actual money. But we've never said, we've never gone this sort of Hunger Games route of who lives, who dies, based off of something out of our control like this. I mean, it's awful to say, even though in the back of your mind, if you're in a position of power, you have to think about those things. But you just can't express them the way we've seen it expressed by actual people voted on by the very people who have voted some of these people in office. They're now saying, hey, thanks for your vote. But if you die, you die. You know, I mean, we can't go Rocky V on these people, or Rocky IV, whichever the one with the Russian is.
Four.
Yeah.
If he dies, he dies. I'm like, why are we going to Rocky?
Yeah.
You're right. There is a balance of how do we handle this. But I guess I'll go back to what I said at the beginning of the show. We've already put the Band-Aid on. We already said, stay at home, bars are closed, everything's closed, no whatever. To pull back on that now would be a terrible decision, in my opinion. Like the Bill Gates interview that I listened to earlier today, he said we're looking at 6 to 10 weeks if we want to do this right. And he said that the curve, if we do it wrong, is potentially devastating. Like, when things like this happen, and I'm not a virologist, but when you let the spread happen and then reintroduce people and give them all of their freedoms, for lack of a better word, back, they tend to go nuts. And if that causes an even bigger spike, this could
be... Well, it's not the tend to go nuts. Like, that's not... Like, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Reopen bars and see where I'm at in 10 minutes.
But I think just in general, once you... Again, we talking about globalization, talking about, transiency and access, once you reintroduce everyone to everyone again... what they choose to do individually is really kind of not the point. The point is you're going to have people interacting with each other, right? Like, you can be completely pious and still, walk past people, interact, touch door handles and all, sure, all those other things. So those are the sort of things, like, once we get back to normal interaction, in close contact and we kind of ignore the idea of 6 feet and you have sidewalks crowded and stores crowded and people waiting in line right behind each other at the grocery store. Once those sort of things are reintroduced, then yeah, if we don't have this under control, we still have people who are contagious and we still don't have a vaccine and we still don't have enough people with a built up immunity to it, then what you're going to see is you're going to see people get sick, which... Okay, fine, if it doesn't shut you down, a majority of them will not have to go to the hospital. So great. Right. But the problem is, if 20% of them do have to go to the hospital, and I'm not saying die, but I'm saying just 20% of them have to go to the hospital, now you're talking about massive numbers, mm-hmm, right? And will it happen all... Because a lot of people's argument is, well, not everybody's going to get sick all at once. Well, no, they're not all going to get sick on the same day, right? But if you have 20% of the population that gets this, that need to go to the hospital, even if it happens in succession, you still have people that are hospitalized for this, the numbers are about on average a week, right? Like, so if I get sick and I have to go to the hospital on Monday and you've got someone who comes in on Wednesday that needs a bed, but I'm there taking up that bed and you're out of beds, guess what? What are you going to do? You're going to push me out early, then put me at risk of not being able to recover, or are you going to not admit that person and then have them still out with the inability to recover? And then that's where things can go from he had a shot to he didn't have a chance because he wasn't able to get the treatment that he needed. And that's the concern, is not having enough when the time comes.
You know, there's a proposed treatment out there. It's it's an antibiotic and anti-malarial. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on their names right now. But that is going to be...
Isn't this your fucking job?
It's part of my job. And fine, fuck you. It's
get mad at me because you don't know what this shit.
Zithromycin and hydroxy...
Hydroxycut?
No, not hydroxycut. Yes, you lose weight and hydroxychloroquine. There, bitch. Anyway, anti-malarial...
I'm not sure how you are claiming victory on any of that, but go ahead.
Okay. apparently that was the thing that caused Trump to get into the fight with the reporter. It says, you're a terrible reporter. That's what my answer to that is. But that could be a potential game changer, because that would actually be a treatment. I've said 10 times on the show, if we had a vaccine right now, that would be a great thing for preventing future additional outbreaks, but it does not treat the people who have the disease.
Right.
This is a medical treatment that they're doing studies on, and I wish I had more access to more studies, but the one study that they showed with those two drugs in combination, the data looked great. Now, that was presented to me through something I clicked on the internet. I don't know where that thing came from. I'm not trying to say
I mean, I guess the one thing to say about that is, neither of us, I think, are really qualified to figure out what how effective it could be. But I think the my bigger concern is, people jumped on Trump for saying, hey, this could be a cure.
Yeah.
And then you had idiots out there who went out and either found it, took too much of it, and ended up in the hospital, or they found something similar, which wasn't correct, which I think is some shit you put in a fish tank, and...
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, and, overdose on that and die, right? Trump can't be responsible for that, right? And I think attacking Trump for it is bad form. I think, should Trump be more careful how he presents this information, i.e. he shouldn't be presenting this information... It's something that should come from doctors, and if you want people to test it, if you think that it's a possibility, there are proper networks and proper communication channels for these things to happen, right? And this is what constantly gets Trump in trouble, where people want to just ignore and sweep under the rug and say it's fine, just let him do what he wants. Like, I feel like I'm in a relationship where I'm with my ex-wife, and we've got a kid, and I want the kid to grow up to be an upstanding adult. So I'm saying we need discipline, we need XYZ, and then the ex-wife is just saying, well, let him do whatever he wants because he's a boy and he needs to shine. Like, this is how his supporters, Trump supporters, treat him. Like, they're the step parent and there's no rules, right? So whatever he does is great, and he's gonna grow up to be a fine young man no matter what. You're too hard on him.
Right.
Right. Where I'm just like, dude, I just don't want the kid to end up being a fucking vagrant and get arrested. Right. And but we're talking about the leader of our fucking country. Right. Like, there are proper channels. Like, if there's information that you have, that there's a drug out there that can treat this, then you need to get that information to the people who can handle it and then disseminate the information properly in terms of dosing and who can take it and what the risks are, what the side effects are.
And just so I don't get accused of spreading misinformation, if these drugs do work in combination, it's to treat an existing disease. Taking them prophylactically does not stop you from getting it. There was a horrible story, I remember, from 2001. The AIDS epidemic in Africa was a real big problem then, and there were really no good drugs out there. And some African country, the leader of an African country, put out the word that if you have sex with a virgin, you won't get AIDS. Now, the point of that was, if you don't have sex with people carelessly...
If you don't have AIDS and they don't have AIDS, then you don't get AIDS.
Right. But what happened was, people took that as, if you have having sex with a virgin cures AIDS.
So,
and so they there were people going around raping kids.
Yes.
And fuck's sake. But that happened.
Yes.
And there's people out drinking bleach because they heard that drinking bleach will get rid of the coronavirus, which it will, because it will kill you and you'll no longer have the coronavirus.
I mean, and so... On the one hand, you can't legislate away stupidity, right?
Unfortunately,
I mean,
we cannot.
You can't, and there are some people out there, and this is where progressives get in trouble, because, a lot of times progressives or people on the far left will just say, well, just ban that, and you can't say this, and you can't do that.
Right.
And it's just like, you can't legislate away stupidity, you can't legislate away racism, you can't just put a law into place to get rid of something that you don't like.
Right.
Right? Like, there's more to it than just, you said something that offends me, you said something that you don't like, that I don't like, so in order to prevent that from ever happening again, then we're going to put a law in place.
Right.
Right? That doesn't work. And so, we have to be careful with placing blame. Like, sometimes it's just like, sometimes people are, we just have stupid people. And stupid people with information that they don't know what to do with are dangerous. And that's what we've seen time and time again since the dawn of man. And so some of this is just, unfortunately, there's no control. Like, you can't stop it from happening, right? You can try to put out the warnings. You can try to, tailor the message as much as possible. You can even limit access if it makes sense, but ultimately, people are going to try to come up with their own home remedies,
right?
I mean, which people have been doing for years, and they're going to try to put their own shit together, and unfortunately, it's going to end up killing people, and as much as you wish that you could make that go away, you can't.
Right. And I don't know what the answer is because, and this is, I think, though, where you're bringing up the influence of social media. It's much easier to get dumb, bad ideas out there now. And people just read headlines, which was why I brought up that other story. All right. I can't do this anymore.
Well, unfortunately, you're going to.
Okay.
So, you know, with all this, we talked about the economy and we talked about how, you know, this is impacting the money markets. This is impacting, you know, we've had 3.3 million people late, you know, file for unemployment. You know, I think in the last week or the last 10 days or whatever it is, you know, we're seeing record numbers of unemployment filings. And those are all bad signs for the economy. There are a lot of people saying we're not in a recession yet. We can avoid a recession, but it's getting harder and harder to say that we're going to be able to avoid it. The markets are completely nuts. We were, you know, we were in a bull market, then we jumped back into a bear market. The market's now, you know, down a little bit, but the market gained more in one day. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before than it had. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, everything that I had, you know, invested recently was tanking by large percentage
points. Oh, I've gotten kicked in the ass too.
And then I looked, and I want to say it was either yesterday or the day before, and not only was it back, but it was back plus.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, in some of the stuff, you know, like some of the stuff that I had invested in, I, you know, I mean, and I had run some things through our buddy Ben, you know, who's the fund manager, and you know, he had given us some stuff on the show. And I kind of dug into that a little bit more. So I just essentially what I did is I stayed firm in all of my positions. I didn't sell anything. A couple things that made sense given everything that's going on. I kind of re-upped in. Like they were, the cost of them was cheaper. You know, using his kind of PE ratio and some other information, I was able to say, all right, these make sense. So I went ahead and jumped in on them when they were down. And I looked, and it was crazy. I could not believe it. As much as I didn't want to look, you know, I opened it up, and I'm just like, well, that's all green. Well, that's weird, because for the last 2 weeks, it's all been red going the wrong direction.
Oh, and I get it.
And it's crazy how the markets have been. That's not to say that I'm this brilliant investor. It's just to say I don't know what that's going to look like on Monday.
You know? Don't know what it looked like since we started the show today.
Well, true. I mean, I mean, who knows what it looks like now.
Don't look.
I won't.
He picked up his phone.
I did. But I won't. But I mean, that's just how crazy things are right now. So, I mean, it just. So with that, Congress passed the $2 trillion stimulus bill, which I believe is the largest bill of any kind passed ever in the United States. There was a little bit of drama. And I can't remember who it was. It's a Republican senator from one of the southern states, did not want to pass it. And he wanted a roll call, and he tried to do all these things to slow it down. Ultimately, I think someone, you know, punched him in the nuts and put him in a closet. And they were able to get the thing through with the majority. Trump said he's going to sign it. You're never going to satisfy everybody with something like this. There are plenty of people who are pissed, rightfully so. There are plenty of people who are thrilled, you know, rightfully so, I guess, in most cases. There's a lot of in between. You know, if your adjusted gross income is $75,000 or less, you get a $1,200 check one time. You know, if you live in Ohio, that's not bad. That'll probably cover your rent and maybe a little bit extra, maybe. If you live in New York or California, I don't know what the fuck that's doing for you.
You can buy, I think, 3 mangoes at Whole Foods.
Right. No avocado toast.
No avocado toast.
I mean, it just,
no asparagus water.
You know, I mean, it's. I mean, I'm sure it can, you know, cover some, you know, some something for you, a credit card bill. You know, it can buy you groceries. It can buy what, you know, whatever. It's something. But I mean, Canada passed something where everybody gets like $2,000 a month for the foreseeable future until this thing wraps up.
You know,
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I mean, so when you look at it in contrast to that, I mean, now Canada has a shit ton fewer people than we do, so that it's not as big of a bill on them. But at the same time, again, they have fewer people to kind of put money into the system to pay that back.
So I can't verify the veracity of this statement,
but you're gonna say it anyway.
I am. Well, I've been working with a guy who's from Denmark, and anytime there's something political that comes up like this, he and I will end up talking about it. And he said basically because of the really high taxes in Denmark, the government has a bunch of cash in reserve so they can deal with an emergency. And we have been slashing taxes mostly on the highest earners, the highest dollar, you know, the richest people for the entire Trump administration, the entire Bush administration. Obama let some stuff expire, but you know, we try to run real lean on taxes and we borrow tons of money, and our national deficit and national debt prove that. Well, when you don't have a rainy day fund and it starts raining, suddenly those, you know, those tax breaks that I felt were unnecessary to begin with really start to bite you in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, you can't doubt that, right? I mean, you can't doubt that, you know, the wealthiest people, you know, figure... No, I think there's a mixed conversation to be had about the wealthiest and the taxes that they pay and how they pay taxes, because even if you have a guy like a Bill Gates or whatever, even if they're only paying 10%, they're still paying a ridiculous sure. amount of money out of what they earn, right? But I mean, the concern is, it's just like, look, man, I mean, like, if you're making more, then you should pay more. And, you know, the opposite is, like, if I'm making more, then I'm creating more employment and I'm paying payroll taxes and I'm paying all these other things. So I should get a break on my taxes. And that's a debate worth having. Sure. And again, I don't think it's, I don't believe that it's fair, you know, to compare us to a country like Denmark or some of these other countries, because, again, they're so much smaller. You know, their systems aren't just about socialize this and that, and they charge more taxes. There's certain other aspects of those economies that we have to take into account. Like they don't have a minimum wage. You know, I mean, like that's the one thing that, you know, everyone here wants a $15 minimum wage, and you want universal this, universal that, but they don't have a minimum wage. So that, like, certain things, like there's a give and take, with this entire, when you're talking about socioeconomic systems, sure. that have to be considered.
Sure, but a lot of the things you're talking about, where you're saying they're that much smaller, true, but their economies are also that much smaller. So a lot of these things are per capita arguments, and you know that levels the playing field. Now, not all of them. Some of them are system-based, and we have much bigger infrastructure needs, but I...
And it also doesn't level the playing field just because, based off of the way our population is, right? I mean, we have a huge poor population. Yeah. We have a shit ton of people in jail who, once they are in jail with felonies, whether it's state or federal level, we immediately cross them off the list of things that they are actually legally allowed to do, which impacts their ability to generate income. Like, there's a lot sure. of there's a lot of factors in here and variables that really kind of manipulate how, you know, you can't just say do it like they do it in Denmark and it can work here, right? I mean,
true.
And again, that, which is my issue with Bernie, is I felt like a lot of those sort of things weren't addressed, right? Like, I mean, like the idea of we can just go to socialize this, socialize that, you know, healthcare and wipe out student loans and all that other stuff. Like, there's a lot of pieces and parts that I don't think you can just glaze over and say, we'll build a plane as it flies. Like, you really have to have that thought out, because if you don't, then you're not going to get anywhere near what you're promoting, and what you get may butcher it to the point where it fucks everybody over.
I agree. It's not as simple as it as gets said in 45-second sound clips and debates or in television ads. I've seen more in-depth interviews with Bernie. I don't know if he's got all the answers, but I think he's got more than people give him credit for.
Nope.
Not that it really matters, because he's not going to be the nominee. I mean, the primary
don't process, tell his, don't tell his proxies that, because
well, you saw I wrote an article on WhiskeyCongress.com saying it's time for the Bernie folks to get on board.
Hopefully they don't see it, because those people are fucking crazy and they may come after you with fucking pitchforks and torches.
I'm really not worried about the Bernie crowd catching up to me. If they won't come out to vote, they're not going to bother putting in the energy to find me and then do something about it. And I'm heavily armed. But really, it's damn it. We are having technical difficulties. All right, folks, that was a rookie mistake by me, but my Danish colleague's ears must have been burning, because he called. I didn't have my phone ringer off, and that was the interruption. So you were saying?
Yeah, so we got a little sidetracked talking about economies and things like that. But so with the stimulus package being passed, you know, we talked about the $1,200 to a person who's making less than $75,000 adjusted gross income. You know, you get a one-time check for $1,200. If you have a kid, you get an additional $500 per kid. And then if you make more than $75,000 AGI, then it gets prorated up to, I think, $99,000 or something along those lines. And then, you know, anyone making $100,000 or more gets nothing. You know, which, again, it can help. You know, if you haven't filed your taxes yet, you know, like, so let's say you made
it's based on last year's taxes, right?
Well, hold on, let me get through it. So let's say you haven't filed your taxes yet this year. You made, you know, let's say you made $90,000 in 2018, but in 2019 you lost your job or you're making significantly less. I would suggest you hurry up and get your taxes filed, because if you haven't filed your taxes yet this year, they will use the 2018 tax filing. If you have filed your taxes, then, you know, in 2019, then they will use this year. So, you know, depending on your situation, you know, like if you're a person who made more than whatever the amount is in 2018 and you want a $1,200 check, and, you know, it may behoove you to hold off and waiting on filing your taxes until the extended deadline, which is in June. I won't say who I'm directing that towards. But
do you know you described me or no?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's the funny thing. You probably don't know. I filed my taxes for 2019 2 days ago.
Okay.
And I made way less this year than I did last year. So I'm actually going to be a case study for this.
Okay.
Because I made...
Well, if you,
much
I mean,
more,
if,
much
if you,
more last year, I did file. I have not paid. It's actually July 15th now.
Is what? Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had already filed my taxes. Okay. Not that it mattered, because mine was about the same. So, okay.
Well, I'm a consultant. You're an employee, so you get a salary and bonuses.
Right.
I either work or I don't.
Right. So, yeah. So we have. So there's that, and I just wanted to throw that out there, so people kind of understood what was going on. IRS.gov does a decent job of kind of explaining what's going on, although their site is kind of a jumbled mess. And I went on it just to look, because I personally won't qualify. Actually, I may qualify for a prorated amount, but I'm not going to qualify for the full $1,200, which is fine to me, because this is for people who need it. I'm still working full time. I'm still getting paid. You know, this doesn't really impact me. You know, there are people, like, I've, you know, my younger cousin, like, this, it impacts her. Plenty of people, I mean, that this will definitely impact. So, I mean, you want to get that information out there. You know, so anyway, besides that, there's the other big issue about this is, you know, breaking the bill down and looking at who, you know, what big entities are getting money, whether it's corporations or, you know, what industries, things like that. And, you know, this part kind of rubbed me the wrong way. There are some industries that are getting bailed out here. The airline industry is getting a big bailout. There are strings attached to their bailout, quote unquote. You know, there's a number of other, a lot of small businesses are being helped. You know, the airlines, one of my big issues with the airlines is, you know, I can't remember if I talked about this, but I worked for a Fortune 500 company, you know, before. And after the 2008 sort of meltdown, our company was one that received, our industry was one that received, you know, some stimulus money and tax [S2] Sure. [S1] Help and things like that. And the whole thing with that is that money was, you know, going to go back and filter back to the employees, and, you know, was supposed to allow for more hiring, and was supposed to, you know, raises and kind of incentivize people to stay, all this other stuff. Well, what the company ended up doing was our C-suite executives and, you know, very much upper level management, they were given raises. You know, which we, you know, kind of, which we found out because it's a publicly traded company. But you know, those people were given raises and then they actually contracted. They jettisoned parts of the company. They laid a bunch of people off. And then they did a massive stock buyback. Right. And it's just like, okay, well, that money you used to buy the stocks, is that the same money that was supposed to go to employees? Like, oh, well, the money that was going to employees went to the employees, the executives. Yay. And then the rest of it basically, you know, kind of went to the shareholders. And so, you know, that left a bad taste in my mouth. Now, I wasn't laid off or let go in that time with that company, but it really pissed me off to the point where it pushed me to start to look and move into a different direction. And I did, as you know. Yes. But so with that, like you have a number of industries that are kind of in this situation again, where they need money, they need help from the government. And the question is, what will they do with it this time around?
And you left out a piece of that. And that is when they have those stock buybacks, that raises stock prices, which helps the same executives that got the raises in the first place.
It helps the shareholders shareholders.
And, well, they're usually awarded cash or stock, you know, bonuses, stock benefits. So that use of money then further helps them.
Yes.
And that was, I think, one of the key sticking points in the, this package. Another problem is going to be, though, there were in the 2008 stimulus, you know, the government sent out checks. I want to say they were $400. And the whole point was, we're going to give everyone $400. Go out, spend money. You'll go out to dinner. You'll do things. You'll stimulate the economy. And fine. Now, lots of people won't be able to spend that money because the places they would spend it at aren't open. Now, that's not the whole point, because a lot of the people who are getting this, like you said, are, you know, service industry people who are trying to pay their rent and can't. So they still benefit because they're not going to get evicted. But the, you know, the money that would have gone to people in those industries, in this case, won't, because they're all shut down due to the...
Yes, but eventually those things will open up.
Eventually.
But you still have, I mean, like people, again, like you said, they need to pay rent. They need to pay their bills. They need to buy groceries. They need to, you know, I mean, like they need to buy gas to get to and from work, even though gas is crazy really cheap right now. And driving a truck right now is amazing.
I go for
I filled my truck up. I have a, you know, I have a Ram 1500, you know, the V8 Hemi, and it normally costs me $60, maybe $70 to fill it up, depending on how much. I fill that bitch up for $30.
I will take my truck for a ride roughly once a day through the metro parks just to get the fuck out of my house so I don't go crazy. And I normal Jim would be like, this is stupid. I'm driving a car, that, you know, a truck that gets 21 miles a gallon. You know,
normally, so that, and that's when you make the decision, you know, I'll ride my bike to a bar.
Exactly. Right. Right. Well, now I'm like, fuck it. I'm going through the metro park. My environmental credibility may have just been damaged a bit.
But, it was damaged when you bought the truck, Jim. It was also damaged when you had two cars.
No, I'm only driving one at a time, and one of them got 30 miles a gallon. Right.
And then it was also damaged when you had three cars.
Fuck you, Steve. Or, you know what? Fuck you. You know what? Now I'm bringing this shit up. One of those cars was a van for a business that was using an ultraviolet ray generator to kill bacteria, mold, and viruses in the air and on surfaces. I sold that fucking machine late 2019.
Okay.
If I still had that machine, how much money I'd be making right now? You know how much business would pay me to come in there and zap the machine and say, we used the...
So for the second time in the show, so did you really just win anything?
Or? No. I'm melting. I'm winning
the fight. Oh, you're having a meltdown. Yes. Oh, okay. You're winning a fight with yourself.
Was this not obviously a meltdown?
I didn't know what was going on.
Okay, well...
Honestly, I was just...
This has been a sober show for both of us. This is not the Manhattan's kicking in. This is just, fuck!
So Jimmy Strokeface is actually having a stroke right
yes,
now.
Yes, this is an actual stroke, and you should call 911. Fuck.
But yeah, I mean, so the stimulus pie, it's out there, and is it? I mean, if you want me, if you're asking for a grade, is it good? Is it bad? It's okay. I mean, it's something. It's better than nothing. I mean, the reality is, $2 trillion probably not enough if we're going to keep if we do what the experts say, what a Bill Gates says, what Anthony Fauci wants. What other medical health officials are saying, what Cuomo in New York is saying, and things like that, then we're shut down for 6 to 8 weeks, and then that is gonna have a ripple effect, long lasting impact on the economy for months, you know, if not a full year, you know. I mean, sure. So you know, people are gonna need more than $1,200. I mean, if you're someone who is making $80,000 a year and you lost your job, that $1,200 is gonna do dick for you. Now, so there's other things out there with that they've done with the unemployment benefits and insurance and things like that that will help ease the burden. But once these things are lifted, like, a lot of these people are not going to be able to get their jobs back, right? I mean, like, so they're going to need something more. And I don't know if there's another round coming. I guess it'll depend on the length of how long a lot of this lasts, and how well the economy is able to get itself going again. I mean, I just hope for the people who need it that they get what they need.
Well, and there's more to the bill than just $1,200, you know, per person. And that's where the really, that's when I'll grade this thing, when I know the details of that, which I don't yet. Like, did they stop the stock buyback? Did they stop the bullshit you described in the past? How much, there's going to be some shitty stuff in this.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be pork in the bill. You know, pork is generally, you know, just extra stuff that gets tacked on, you know, for various legislators. I mean, and this being the biggest bill ever passed, of course it's there. Nobody likes it. I mean, I tweeted something out today where Nikki Haley went through and said, oh, the arts and humanities get this much, and the Kennedy Center gets this much.
Oh,
and it went through and all these sort of things. And initially I'm just like, yeah, you know what, Nikki, you're right. And I was like, me and Nikki Haley kind of finding our way back to each other. But yet, then I thought about it, and I'm like, well, no, because these specific things that she's talking about, whether it's the, you know, endowment for the arts and humanities or whatever, or the Kennedy Center, like, I don't know how much money that they send out, or, first of all, I don't know who they employ, how many people they employ. I don't know, like, who they give money to that rely on that money for funding to keep people working. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, just because it's art and humanities, right, and we don't value it as much as maybe we should, or as much as a refined society would, you know, in a perfect world, like, those are still people working, right? And we don't want to put them out of work just because, well, we don't feel you're important right now, so you shouldn't work. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, no, actually, like, just because it's a different sort of realm, and it's not, you know, blue collar guy with a lunch pail, and it's not, you know, fancy sales guy and all that other shit, like, those people need to work too. And that's a lot of time, that's how they get money to be able to allow those people to keep working.
And that you're almost under the textbook definition of non-essential.
Right.
Right. You don't need people going to museums right now. In fact, that's exactly what you don't want. But there are people who pay their bills and feed their families by working at museums. And those people need to be treated with the same respect.
You know, a lot of people are saying, well, we shouldn't be paying people to stay home. Actually, maybe we should. Maybe we should incentivize people to be willing to stay home that extra 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to get control of the virus thing, which is causing all this, right? Like, so the idea, like, well, we shouldn't be incentivizing people to stay. Yes, the fuck you should, right? Yeah. Actually, we should. Let's go ahead and pay people to stay at home. I know that goes against everything capitalism, right? And that pisses everybody off. And, well, once you do that, you'll never... Yes, you will, right? Like, yes, you will. The one thing we know about this country and the one thing we know about these people are our people is that we're resilient. And for the most part, most of us want to work, and most of us want to be productive members of society. So... will you have some people that will try to manipulate the system?
Of course.
And yes, you will, but you already have that now. And guess what? It's not just poor black people that you want to put on the poster child of this. I know plenty of, you know, blue-collar, America First, Blue Lives Matter guys that are looking for any possible way to get on disability so that they don't have to go to work every day, right? Like, I mean, like, so let's just go ahead and get that out there. So this idea... right, that we shouldn't be paying people to stay home is bullshit. We actually should, because that's how you get control of the virus, which then, once you get control of the virus and you allow time for a vaccine, you allow time for them to figure out a way to treat it, then you can get people back out without a threat of the virus reoccurring and having a double impact, and then your economy gets back up and running sooner, faster, more efficiently.
It's penny wise, pound foolish, right? If you save the money now, by getting everyone back out there and or not incentivizing it, it comes back and bites you in the ass down the road. Not that calling a $2 trillion stimulus penny,
It's crazy. It's someone did the math on what $2 trillion. I stopped after, you know.
It turns out if you were to give $1 trillion to every American, you could give it to two of them.
Stop.
No, I'm doing that. It's an old Dennis Miller joke.
So there's, you know, one last thing. I mean, this kind of happened as we were, you know, getting ready to get this going. Trump goes out and he, you know, New York needs, I think, Andrew Cuomo asked for like 50,000 ventilators.
Right.
And, you know, I think part of his thinking is, listen, like, right now we need, you know, like right now we've got six, you know, like 3,000 people on ventilators. We're probably going to see 6,000, you know, in the next week. And by the end of the month, you know, by the end of April, it'll be 11,000. It's going to continue to grow, exponential growth. So I think he went out and he said he needed, you know, 50, 60,000 ventilators. Trump retorted, well, no, he doesn't need that many. He doesn't need 50. He doesn't need that many ventilators. Well, now cycle back, like, and this has all happened in the last 12 hours. Now Trump has come back and saying, we need a lot of ventilators, right? So now he's demanding, right? He demanded on Twitter. He demanded on Twitter.
Because of course he did.
Right, that Ford and GM need to start producing ventilators, right? They need to flip their plants and they need to flip them to start, you know, manufacturing ventilators. And then he goes on to say, you know, because GM screwed up and they closed the Lordstown plant, they need to reopen the Lordstown plant. They need to start producing ventilators there, and they need to get on it now, right? He put it in a tweet. It's there. It's archived. It's a tweet from the president. Only problem with that, one little aspect about having Lordstown do it, GM sold the Lordstown plant. They sold it last year. And Trump tweeted about it and told everyone how great this was that GM did this, right? Like, so, again, this guy with his messaging and I'm beyond the point of wanting to bash him, right? I've always tried to be as objective as possible. He makes it hard to be objective when you're talking about him because he gives you so much material to criticize. But things like this is why it's hard to take him serious. This is why you're going to have a media that jumps all over him and says, look at what the fuck do you want me to do with this, right? I mean, like, he's putting people out there. And then what's worse is that there are people who support him that are his surrogates, that are his adopted surrogates, right? Like, it's one, if you were getting paid, you know, like some of the people who follow us on Twitter, like if they were getting paid to just spread this guy's message nonstop, that's one thing. I could at least understand it from a money-making standpoint. But you're not getting paid. He doesn't know who you are. He doesn't give a shit about you, right? If you could drop dead right now and Trump would not give two shits about you or your family, and you are touting this guy and supporting him at any and all costs to make sure that he is seen in the best, most positive light all the fucking time, and I don't fucking understand it, right? Like, and if these people had the balls to fucking call him out, right, in mass and just say, hey, we're all about your message, but that's bullshit, right? Even if he pushed back on them, at least then they would, you know, I could at least respect them, right?
Well, the cult doesn't allow that. Let me say a couple things real quick on that, though. There are tons of regulations that go into manufacturing medical devices, which is what respirators are, ventilators are. If they decided today that whoever bought the Lordstown plant was going to dedicate that plant to making them, it doesn't just start happening overnight. There's a lot of pieces that go into place to make an operation get up and running. Even if, you know, the OSHA and FDA and all the other federal agencies said, okay, we really don't have time to do, you know, pre-approval inspections, which is what they do when you start a new manufacturing facility up. We don't have time for that, so we're just going to, you know, lay out regulations and here's what you have to do this and go. They don't start making them tomorrow. It takes weeks or months before they're getting the first one off the line.
I don't know. Like, so I've seen a number of articles about companies that have flipped and started making certain things, whether it's masks, medical equipment, things like that. And you would know better than I on what the mandates, and I have to imagine that making an N95 mask is a hell of a lot different than making a ventilator. I get that. But I've also seen companies that are saying, like, we're going to make ventilators. Now, you know better than I on the timeline, but the way that those articles are presented, it seems like it's going to happen relatively quickly. Maybe they're just, it's the way they're writing these articles.
And I don't know the details of ventilators. But I do know, I mean, they're going to have HEPA filters. Those need to be manufactured. You can't just start making them because you want to. There's technology that goes into
the machine. We can't just go rent a storage space and fire it up.
Yes, you could, but you wouldn't come up with a product that helped people. Sorry.
And you know me, I'd end up making meth anyway.
Yeah, well. Anyway, it's not that simple, but to go to companies with automated manufacturing capabilities and trained people who know how to do that, that makes sense. But to make it sound like you give this order today and they're going to be producing tomorrow, that's a pipe dream.
He literally said, start doing it now. I mean, it's just like, it's hard to, like, look, I mean, if you're just looking at...
He's a real estate guy and a fucking television star. He's never manufactured or been... I'm sure he's been in a manufacturing plant at some point in his life. Did he know what he was looking at? Of course not. But the idea that you can just say, we're going to start doing this, and it happens, especially when it comes to medical devices and pharmaceutical manufacturing,
It goes back to the idea of using the proper channels and the proper networks and using what you have available to you to kind of get that message across, right? Like, I mean, there's ways to do this where you have the conversation, you set it in motion, and then you deliver the message in a way that makes sense. You don't do it on Twitter. You don't stand in front of a podium and say, yeah, we're doing this, and GM needs to do that, and Ford needs to do that. You need to engage them. And if those things are happening back channel, right, the people that are doing it, like whoever in his administration or in his cabinet, it's their job to do that, then, you know, which I'm sure it is, like at some point he just needs to, and how many times are we going to say this, but he needs to step back, he needs to shut up, and he needs to allow his people to do their job. If someone is doing this already and trying to work with the auto dealers and auto manufacturers to get this going, he's making his own staff's job unnecessarily harder, right? And by making their job harder, it delays the process that needs to take place. And it could, if we're talking about ventilators, which are things that could save people's lives, right? Like, you don't want to delay that at all. So he needs to shut the fuck up. And the fact that there's just no one who can tell him to do it, no one that will tell him to do it. And I think anyone who could tell him to do it, he's fired because they would tell him to do it. Is just sad. It's a sad state of affairs for our republic.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, this isn't one of the situations where we had a localized disaster and other countries can come to our aid. The whole world is dealing with this
right.
shit. So it's not like we can say, hey, China, sorry about blaming you for that virus thing. Hey, you've got this manufacturing facility. We want to order X number of ventilators. They're dealing with this as much as we are.
Well, I mean, that's just the thing, though. That's actually closer to what's actually happening, because China is on the end of it, is on the dipping end of this. So, you know, China is back up and running. Like, their plants are opening. Like, people are you know, back out. Like, their curve, you know, they flattened the curve. It took them some time. Obviously, you have to be wary of numbers that are coming out of China all the time. But what we do know is that they're starting to reopen, right? Like, there's actual satellite imagery of this is China before.
The smog is coming back.
Well, no, they showed an actual image of China, you know, during the shutdown, and they're just like, look, this is crazy, but there is nothing,
absolutely.
In the air. And so now China is back up and running, and, you know, they're already saying, like, you guys are going to need this and that, so we're going to have to talk. But the problem is that this like, they're going to be able to hold something over Trump. Like, listen, if you want it, you're going to have to ease up on some of these tariffs. You're going to have to ease up, you know, this trade deal that we talked about that is, you know, apparently done but not done is probably now definitely not done.
And there's lots of conspiracy theorists in America saying this whole thing was done by the Chinese government to pay us back for the tariffs.
So who was it? Was it the Democrats? Was it the Chinese?
Hold on. Apparently in China, they're blaming America.
Yes.
So we're doing a...
And
you did it.
And the white nationalists are blaming the Jews.
Right, I'm sure they are. Is that true?
Yeah. Like, there's white nationalists.
I thought you were joking.
No. It's a small percentage of white nationalists. Crazy. I went down the rabbit hole and... I mean, they're literally saying that, you know, Netanyahu and company, you know, conspired with China to release this, and that it's only targeting, you know, non-Jew people, you know, with non-Jewish, like, it's fucking crazy. God. And I'm just like, yeah, it's actually...
You give me shit for watching CNN every now and then.
Yeah,
you
get down
those rabbit holes,
right? Right. I mean, but this is...
Jim, you're drinking too much beer. You've got meth pouring out of your eyeballs.
Right. Yes, that's exactly what it was. I thought it was funny. I knew it was bullshit. It's terrifying that people think that way. But they, you know, and I always have to ask the question, do they believe this bullshit, or do they just know that there's a market for it? Or do they not believe it, they know there's a market for it, and at some point in time... they just begin to forget, you know, the lines right. start to blur.
And some people clearly believe it and take it too far.
Yeah.
And so even if the person who says it initially is saying it because there's a market for it and they know it's bullshit, someone out there is going to do something awful because they believe
it. Yeah, and I mean, it's just, it's not just racism or white nationalism. I mean, you see, I think you see it with, you know, Fox News and they're pushing Trump's agenda. I think there's plenty of people at Fox who know that plenty of the stuff that Trump says and does is bullshit, but they know that there's a market for it. But then at some point in time, when you make money off of it and you get more notoriety and fame because of it, all of you begin to buy it.
Right? You become what you've invented.
Yeah.
All right. So one more thing to bring up real quick. I could spend hours on this, but they're changing the way police are being told to respond to things. In Cincinnati, police were told, the citizens were told, police will not respond to break-ins.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. There are a number of things, and police in different locations are all reporting, like, listen, you know, we're basically doing selective policing, which is something that most of these places have never seen before. You know, how they respond to certain things. Like, there are certain things. Like, I was listening to a guy on the radio, a police officer, and I'm not sure what location, but he's just like, look, we were told, you know, like, we pull someone over in a stolen car, we're basically giving them a citation. They're not arresting the person that I'm taking the damn car. Like, they're literally just hitting them with it. Here's a ticket. You know, we'll figure it out later. Which, you know, kind of goes to the, I mean, they're also releasing people from jails, low-level offenders, and whoever they can. If you can get people on house arrest as opposed to being in jail, they're doing that as well. I mean, which raises the question then, home defense, self-defense, buying a gun, is gun now all of a sudden, right? How you know, essential are gun stores and places to buy guns? And I think that's a legitimate argument. There are certain places where, you know, some of these guys, if they do get released, they're going to do bad shit. They're going to go back to what they know. Like, if they don't give a shit about the law, they don't give a fuck about a virus. I'm sorry. So, you know, like, some of these guys are risks to offend and do dangerous things. And I think people need to be vigilant. I don't think we are... You know, I don't think we're at the level of experience the Purge, where it's just a free for all and everybody can just kill each other. You know, but it's not a situation where this is not the time to leave your doors unlocked, no matter where you live. So you just need to be vigilant, keep your head on a swivel. If you've never owned a firearm before and you don't know anything about firearms, I don't know if going out and buying one is the thing to do right now because you don't have time to figure it out. Right. Well, unless you're not working, and then all you have is time.
You've got YouTube.
And you don't have a kindergartner who is exhausting. Then, yeah, sure, go ahead and figure it out. But, you know, just people be careful with the gun buying if you still can, because a lot of gun stores are either sold out or closed. You know, so let's just be smart about that for those listening that are contemplating it.
Yeah. And quit hoarding toilet paper. It's not going to be an issue.
I don't give a fuck. I have a lot.
I do too.
It's not even from hoarding. It's just I shop at Costco.
Right.
You know, I mean, you
don't buy small quantity stuff at Costco.
No, I mean, I just, you know, I buy two rolls of toilet paper, two rolls of paper towels at Costco, you know, every third time that I go, because I go to Costco once a month. And, you know, two rolls of toilet paper, two rolls of paper towel,
two packages,
whatever. Right, yeah. But buying two of those will last, they literally last me maybe more than a quarter. Right. I mean, so I mean, it's just, you know, 3-4 months. So I had just went before all this broke and I wasn't out before that. So, I mean, unless something terrible happens with my stomach over and over again for weeks on end, I should be good.
On that note, should we wrap it up?
Yeah. I mean, I could still order a bidet from Amazon.
Have you actually, that a few friends of mine are going nuts about bidets.
So I've used one once. And not even, so the Velvet Tango Room here in Cleveland, if you go in the bathroom.
I've never been there.
Okay. You haven't?
No.
I thought you went with me.
No, we tried to go once and then.
We didn't meet there for happy hour that one time?
No, we didn't.
Oh, I think, did I go there and just maybe. Fuck it?
No, maybe I thought that was the night we were supposed to go to the strip club and.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That fell through. Yeah. I thought we were supposed to go another. Anyway, they have a bidet in their men's room. And so I didn't need to take a shit. But I was just like, what is this? So I just sat down and fired it in there. And it is a powerful stream. You need to be situated appropriately or it'll reverse teabag you. So you just, you know, you got to know how to sit. But it seems like it would be effective if you needed it to get in there and do what you got to do.
A bunch of my friends on the comedy scene are huge in them. And it's like in the Cleveland Comedy Facebook page. There's bidet talk every day. Like, I'm not worried with the toilet paper stuff. I got a bidet. And I was like, getting a jet of cold water shot up my ass just doesn't appeal to me. I'm sorry.
It's not about appealing. It's about getting the job done.
Yeah, fair. Fair.
And right? I mean, it's
scraping my ass with a piece of paper isn't exactly
right. I mean, none of it's great. I mean,
so one other thing we got to do real quick. We're trying to get together with My Whiskey Den.
Yeah.
We've been interacting with you guys on Twitter and sending some emails. We're going to try to talk on their show in the near future. But if you're listening to us, please check them out. It's My Whiskey Den on YouTube.
Yeah, and I mean, it's three guys in, you know, different locations, and they talk about whiskey. They kind of take our role where we used to talk about whiskey a lot, and they do it a hell of a lot more, and they do a really good job with it. They grab one for the show, and they give you a good, you know, anywhere from a half hour to an hour, depending on what they have going on. Show is on YouTube, you know, and it's fun. You know, yeah. They're a fun group of guys, it seems like, and they're passionate about whiskey. And so if you want more whiskey talk, you can go there. Jim and I aren't abandoning whiskey completely. We still will talk about it. You know, as it kind of fits in the show, I don't think we can abandon it with the name Whiskey Congress in the title. So that definitely will Fair still point. Happen. But yeah, so check out My Whiskey Den on YouTube.
And check us out. We are at Whiskey Congress on social media. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email me. Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email him. Thanks for listening. Hang in there. And I know it's becoming the cliche of the time, but stay safe and keep your social distance. We're out.